Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Mikey, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, May 31st. Preparing for a disaster. Midland Airport conducts FAA-required emergency drill. By B.K. Richter, staff writer. An emergency response could be seen from all angles Thursday morning as first responders descended upon the Midland International Air and Spaceport. The response was a planned drill called an airport emergency plan that every airport for air carrier operations must test every 3 years. The Thursday exercise was part of an FAA requirement. An Air Force C-130 plane, more than 30 volunteers consisting of Midland High students and more than 30 fire trucks along with emergency personnel, descended upon the Midland Airport after drill organizers confirmed the exercise with the airport's radio tower. Volunteers donning mock wounds were immediately taken to the airport's first responders where they were triaged. The other survivors of the drill were inflatable victims which the Midland Fire Department created a triage center for and began to tag. Some of the survivors were then carried to the makeshift triage center to receive medical care. According to the City of Midland, the airport emergency plan must be reviewed annually and tested with a full-scale exercise. Before Thursday's drill, the last disaster drill at the Midland International Air and Spaceport was in May 2021. The purpose of the drill is to evaluate the airport emergency plan with key stakeholders and mutual aid responders to identify strengths and weaknesses within the plan. If a mass casualty event does occur at the Midland International Air and Spaceport, then the community will be ready to respond and act as needed to save lives, the City of Midland said in a press statement. Verdict: Trump guilty. Becomes first former U.S. president convicted of felony crimes. By Michael R. Sisak, Jennifer Peltz, Associated Press. New York. Donald Trump became the first former American president to be convicted of felony crimes Thursday as a New York jury found him guilty of all 34 charges in a scheme to illegally influence the 2016 election through a hush money payment to a porn actor who said the two had sex. Trump sat stone-faced while the verdict was read as cheering from the street below could be heard in the hallway on the courthouse 15th floor, where the decision was revealed after more than 9 hours of deliberations. This was a rigged, disgraceful trial, an angry Trump told reporters after leaving the courtroom. The real verdict is going to be November 5th by the people. They know what happened, and everyone knows what happened here. Judge Juan Merchants set sentencing for July 11th, just days before the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, where GOP leaders, who remained resolute in their support in the immediate aftermath of the verdict, are expected to formally make him their nominee. The verdict is a stunning legal reckoning for Trump and exposes him to potential prison time in the city, where his manipulations of the tabloid press helped catapult him from a real estate tycoon to reality television star and ultimately president. As he seeks to reclaim the White House in this year's election, the judgment presents voters with another test of their willingness to accept Trump's boundary-breaking behavior. Trump is expected to quickly appeal the verdict and will face an awkward dynamic as he returns to the campaign trail with felony convictions. There are no campaign rallies on the calendar for now, though he's expected to hold fundraisers next week. The falsifying business records charges carry up to 4 years behind bars, though Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Braff would not say Thursday if prosecutors intend to seek imprisonment. And it is not clear whether the judge, who earlier in the trial warned of jail time for gag order violations, would impose that punishment even if asked. The conviction and even imprisonment will not bar Trump from continuing his pursuit of the White House. Trump faces 3 other felony indictments, but the New York case may be the only one to reach a conclusion before the November election, adding to the significance of the outcome. Though the legal and historical implications of the verdict are readily apparent, the political consequences are less so given its potential to reinforce rather than reshape already hardened opinions about Trump. Ahead of the verdict, Trump's campaign had argued that no matter what the jury decided, the outcome was unlikely to sway voters, and the election would instead be decided by issues such as inflation. For another candidate in another time, a criminal conviction might doom a presidential run, but Trump's political career has endured through two impeachments, allegations of sexual abuse, investigations into everything from potential ties to Russia to plotting to overturn an election, and personally salacious storylines, including the emergence of a recording in which he boasted about grabbing women's genitals. In addition, the general allegations of the case have been known to voters for years, and while tawdry, are widely seen as less grievous than the allegations he faces in three other cases that charge him with subverting American democracy and mishandling national security secrets. Even so, the verdict is likely to give President Joe Biden and fellow Democrats space to sharpen arguments that Trump is unfit for office. Though for now, the White House offered only a muted statement saying that it respected the rule of law. On the other hand, the decision will also provide fodder for the presumptive Republican nominee to advance his unsupported claims that he is victimized by a criminal justice system he insists is politically motivated against him. Trump maintained throughout the trial that he had done nothing wrong and that the case should never have been brought, railing against the proceedings from inside the courthouse, where he was joined by a parade of high-profile Republican allies and racking up fines for violating a gag order with inflammatory out-of-court comments about witnesses. Republicans showed no sign of loosening their embrace of the party leader, with House Speaker Mike Johnson releasing a statement lamenting what he called a shameful day in American history. He called the case a purely political exercise, not a legal one. The first criminal trial of a former American president always presented a unique test of the court system, not only because Trump's prominence, but also because of his relentless verbal attacks on the foundation of the case and its participants. But the verdict from the 12-person jury marked a repudiation of Trump's efforts to undermine confidence in the proceedings or to potentially impress the panel with a show of GOP support. The trial involved charges that Trump falsified business records to cover up hush money payments to Stormy Daniels, the porn actor who said she had sex with the married Trump in 2006. The $130,000 payment was made by Trump's former lawyer and personal fixer, Michael Cohen, to buy Daniels' silence during the final weeks of the 2016 race and what prosecutors allege was an effort to interfere in the election. When Cohen was reimbursed, the payments were recorded as legal expenses, which prosecutors said was an unlawful attempt to mask the true purpose of the transaction. Trump's lawyers contend they were legitimate payments for legal services. Trump has denied the sexual encounter, and his lawyers argued during the trial that his celebrity status, particularly during the 2016 campaign, made him a target for extortion. They've said hush money deals to bury negative stories about Trump were motivated by personal considerations such as the impact on his family and brand as a businessman, not political ones. They also sought to undermine the credibility of Cohen, the star prosecution witness who pleaded guilty in 2018 to federal charges related to the payments, as driven by personal animus toward Trump, as well as fame and money. The trial featured more than 4 weeks of occasionally riveting testimony that revisited an already well-documented chapter from Trump's past. When his 2016 campaign was threatened by the disclosure of an Access Hollywood recording that captured him talking about grabbing women sexually without their permission, and the prospect of other stories about Trump and sex surfacing that would be harmful to his candidacy. Trump himself did not testify, but jurors heard his voice through a secret recording of a conversation with Cohen in which he and the lawyer discussed a $150,000 hush money deal involving a Playboy model, Karen McDougal, who has said she had an affair with Trump. "What do we got to pay for this? $150?" Trump was heard saying on the recording made by Cohen. Daniels herself testified, offering at times a graphic recounting of the sexual encounter she says they had in a hotel suite during a Lake Tahoe golf tournament. The former publisher of the National Enquirer, David Pecker, testified about how he worked to keep stories harmful to the Trump campaign from becoming public at all, including by having his company buy McDougal's story. Jurors also heard from Keith Davidson, the lawyer who negotiated the hush money payments on behalf of Daniels and McDougal. He detailed the tense negotiations to get both women compensated for their silence, but also faced an aggressive round of questioning from a Trump attorney who noted that Davidson had helped broker similar hush money deals in cases involving other prominent figures. But the most pivotal witness, by far, was Cohen, who spent days on the stand and gave jurors an insider's view of the hush money scheme and what he called was Trump's detailed knowledge of it. "Just take care of it," he quoted Trump as saying at one point. He offered jurors the most direct link between Trump and the heart of the charges, recounting a meeting in which they and the then chief financial officer of Trump Organization described a plan to have Cohen reimbursed in monthly installments for legal fees. And he emotionally described his dramatic break with Trump in 2018, when he decided to cooperate with prosecutors after a decade-long career as the then-president's personal fixer. "To keep the loyalty and to do the things that he had asked me to do, I violated my moral compass, and I suffered the penalty, as has my family," Cohen told the jury. The outcome provides a degree of vindication for Bragg, who had characterized the case as being about election interference rather than hush money, and defended it against criticism from legal experts who called it the weakest of the four prosecutions against Trump. "I did my job," he told reporters after the verdict. "Our job is to follow the facts and the law without fear or favor, and that's exactly what we did here." But it took on added importance not only because it proceeded to trial first, but also because it could be the only one of the cases to reach a jury before the election. The other three cases, local and federal charges in Atlanta and Washington that he conspired to undo the 2020 election, as well as a federal indictment in Florida charging him with illegally hoarding top-secret records, are bogged down by delays or appeals. Sheffield fires back at FTC, unjustifiably vilifying me. By Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. When the Federal Trade Commission approved ExxonMobil's acquisition of Pioneer Natural Resources earlier this month, it did so with the condition former Pioneer president and chief executive officer Scott Sheffield be banned from serving on ExxonMobil's board of directors. The agency alleged Sheffield engaged in collusion activity that could have raised the price of oil and was concerned about potential anti-competitive conduct if he served on the board. Now Sheffield is firing back, denying the allegations and asking the FTC to withdraw its ban. In his first public comment since the allegations were made as part of the consent order allowing the merger, Sheffield called the allegations a false narrative, mischaracterization of the facts and evidence, and a baseless interpretation of the applicable law. In the comment submitted on his behalf by his attorneys, Sheffield stated, "This document lays out in detail why the FTC is wrong to imply that I ever engaged in, promoted, or even suggested any form of anti-competitive behavior." He continued, "It also shows how publicly and unjustifiably vilifying me will have a chilling effect on the ability of business leaders in any sector of our economy to address shareholder demands and to exercise their constitutionally protected right to advocate for their industries." His attorney said the ordered restriction on his right to be appointed to ExxonMobil's board is arbitrary, capricious, and abuse of discretion beyond FTC's lawful authority and not in the public interest. Sheffield's comment offers explanations for the FTC's allegations. The FTC alleges that putting him on the Exxon board would substantially lessen competition in the global market for crude oil because of his prior public and private statements about the industry. The complaint cites 6 news articles with public statements and 9 text threads. Its case is built on a false narrative about these statements and a far-fetched interpretation of the applicable statutes. The FTC conducted a 6-month investigation of the Exxon Pioneer merger and yet did almost nothing to understand the context, meaning, or even the subject of his statements at issue in this case. Remarkably, the FTC examined him under oath for 4 hours on April 9, 2024. But did not ask questions about his communications and gave him no opportunity to explain them. The FTC's press release says he exchanged hundreds of text messages with OPEC representatives and officials discussing crude oil market dynamics, pricing, and output. This is dead wrong. There was one instance in which he initiated a text exchange with a representative or official of OPEC, and that was to put Secretary General Mohamed Barkindo in contact with the Texas Railroad Commission as part of an official government proceeding. The other text messages were initiated by a government minister, and almost all of these blast text messages containing public information like news articles that went to many recipients without any response or exchange. There were four occasions when the government official asked Mr. Sheffield to provide something in response, and these requests were for public information, such as a copy of a news article or a presentation from a widely attended conference. At no time did government officials and Mr. Sheffield exchange competitively sensitive information, the comment continues. The FTC alleges that widespread discussion in the industry about capital discipline was a way of signaling industry members to collude in restricting production. Again, not true. Capital discipline is a well-understood financial concept, and shareholders began raising concerns about it in the oil sector around 2017. His comments were addressing shareholder demands made by prominent fund managers who represent trillions of dollars of investments for pension/retirement funds and who were concerned about returns. Contrary to the FTC's allegation, this was not an attempt to signal about output in the oil market. His statements were made in public interviews and speeches involving matters of investor and public interest. These statements were perfectly legitimate and also protected by the First Amendment. Sheffield's attorneys conclude, the FTC plays a long-standing, well-established, and vital role in protecting American consumers and businesses from anti-competitive corporate behavior. But in straining to find a reason to criticize the merger of Exxon and Pioneer, the FTC stepped well beyond its proper mandate and unjustly smeared Mr. Sheffield. How to Protect Pets from Snake Bites in West Texas, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. As most West Texans know, warm temperatures can bring snakes to the surface, which presents a danger to household pets at higher risk of venomous bites. According to Texas A&M University School of Veterinary Medicine and Biomedical Sciences, the first thing to do once a pet owner suspects a snake bite is to take your pet to the nearest vet clinic as safely and quickly as possible. Even if the pet owner does not suspect a venomous snake bite, a visit to the local vet's office is still advised. Pet owners should also familiarize themselves with venomous snakes within the region. According to the Texas Parks and Wildlife, the state of Texas hosts 15 potentially dangerous snake species or subspecies. The majority of snakes within the region fall into the pit viper subspecies. Pit vipers include various rattlesnakes, copperheads, and cottonmouths or water moccasins. There is one exception to this rule, as the coral snake, being native to Texas, falls within the cobra snake family. These are the snake bite symptoms to watch for in household pets: shaking or twitching of the bite victim's muscles, difficulty breathing, hind limb weakness, causing the collapse of the animal, loss of bladder and bowel control, vomiting, paralysis, salivation, and enlarged pupils. Veterinarians also advise that it is difficult to spot bite marks on pets because they are typically concealed in their fur. As far as treatments for pets that are suffering from a snake bite, experts say that starts at home with pre-hospital care and varies between pit viper envenomation and coral snake envenomation. With pit viper envenomation, the most important thing is to keep the pet as calm as possible. Dr. Vance Wheeler, a veterinary resident at the Texas A&M School of Veterinary Medicine and Biomedical Sciences, shared in an article. The higher their blood pressure, the more anxious they are. That's going to increase blood flow and increase circulation of venom throughout the body. Wheeler said although the pet owner may be tempted to seek anti-venom, heading to the nearest vet clinic is better. Another important tip for pet owners is not all venomous snake bites have high levels of envenomation. In other words, there is a remote possibility that your pet was not injected with venom, even if the snake inflicting the bite proves to be venomous. As far as popular myths associated with snake bites, Wheeler advises pet owners to not ice pack or hot pack their pets. It's not been shown to be helpful to incise or suction the bites at the site where the biting incident occurred. Also, no tourniquets or compression bandages, he said in an article. Essentially, the venom should not be allowed to be isolated in one part of the body. Also, instead of trying to capture the snake, Wheeler suggests taking a photo from a safe distance. Also, pay close attention to if the snake is a pit viper or a coral snake, as this will make a difference in the pet's treatment plan. Kids Zone Announcement, Grade 25 Nurses, Jim Hall Book Signing, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Sensory-friendly Kids Zone play hours will be part of MexTech's Family Fiesta. Organizers of this year's Mextex Family Fiesta have created an environment inside the Kids Zone play area for children with additional support needs. Details: this new feature aims to provide a sensory-friendly play area for children with additional support needs, ensuring that every child can fully enjoy the festivities. The Kids Zone, located inside the Midland County Horseshoe, will offer sensory-friendly hours from noon until 3 p.m. The Midland Hispanic Chamber of Commerce created this sensory-friendly environment with the invaluable guidance of Share. In this designated play area, children can enjoy activities like face painting and sensory bags in a soothing atmosphere. Designed for those sensitive to loud noises, the space will be quiet and feature bean bags for kids to relax and unwind. The Kids Zone is proudly sponsored by Pristine Organic Cleaners and Midland College, demonstrating their commitment to creating an inclusive and welcoming environment for all families. The Midland Hispanic Chamber of Commerce will be hosting its 37th Mextex Family Fiesta on June 8th at the new location, the Midland County Horseshoe. The annual event is the Chamber's largest fundraiser of the year. Mextex Family Fiesta promises a day filled with entertainment and cultural celebration for the whole family. Festivities will commence at noon and continue until midnight, featuring live performances by renowned artists such as AJ Castillo, Ruben Ramos, and the Art Tiguerina Band and Grupo Prussian. In addition to the musical lineup, attendees can look forward to a menudo and fajita cook-off, a cornhole tournament, the inaugural Niña Hispana of the Permian Basin pageant, and dozens of food trucks and vendors. Admission to the daytime festivities is free for all, with advance tickets available for the evening concert at a discounted rate of $20. Tickets will also be available for purchase on the day of the event for $25. For more information, visit www.midlandmextex.com. Kids Zone Announcement, Grade 25 Nurses, Gym Hall Book Signing, by B.K. Richter, Staff Writer. Sensory-friendly Kids Zone play hours will be part of Mextex Family Fiesta. Organizers of this year's Mextex Family Fiesta have created an environment inside the Kids Zone play area for children with additional support needs. Details: this new feature aims to provide a sensory-friendly play area for children with additional support needs, ensuring that every child can fully enjoy the festivities. The Kids Zone, located inside the Midland County Horseshoe, will offer sensory-friendly hours from noon until 3 p.m. The Midland Hispanic Chamber of Commerce created this sensory-friendly environment with the invaluable guidance of Share. In this designated play area, children can enjoy activities like face painting and sensory bags in a soothing atmosphere. Designed for those sensitive to loud noises, the space will be quiet and feature bean bags for kids to relax and unwind. The Kids Zone is proudly sponsored by Pristine Organic Cleaners and Midland College, demonstrating their commitment to creating an inclusive and welcoming environment for all families. The Midland Hispanic Chamber of Commerce will be hosting its 37th Mextex Family Fiesta on June 8th at the new location, the Midland County Horseshoe. The annual event is the Chamber's largest fundraiser of the year. Mextex Family Fiesta promises a day filled with entertainment and cultural celebration for the whole family. Festivities will commence at noon and continue until midnight, featuring live performances by renowned artists such as AJ Castillo, Ruben Ramos, and the Art Tiguerina Band and Grupo Prussian. In addition to the musical lineup, attendees can look forward to a menudo and fajita cook-off, a cornhole tournament, the inaugural Niña Hispana of the Permian Basin pageant, and dozens of food trucks and vendors. Admission to the daytime festivities is free for all, with advance tickets available for the evening concert at a discounted rate of $20. Tickets will also be available for purchase on the day of the event for $25. For more information, visit www.midlandmextex.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, May 30th. ConocoPhillips buying Marathon Oil for $17.1 billion in all-stock deal as energy prices rise. ConocoPhillips is buying Marathon Oil in an all-stock deal valued at approximately $17.1 billion as energy prices rise and big oil companies reap massive profits. The deal is valued at $22.5 billion when including $5.4 billion in debt. Crude prices have jumped more than 12% this year, and the cost for a barrel rose above $80 this week. Oil majors put up record profits after Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022, and while those numbers have slipped, there has been a surge in mergers between energy companies flush with cash. Chevron said last year that it was buying Hess in a $53 billion acquisition, though that deal faces headwinds. The company warned the buyout may be in jeopardy because it will require the approval of ExxonMobil and a Chinese national oil company, which both hold rights to development in an oil field off the coast of the South American nation Guyana, where Hess is a big player. In July of last year, ExxonMobil said that it would pay $4.9 billion for Denbury Resources, an oil and gas producer that has entered the business of capturing and storing carbon and stands to benefit from changes in U.S. climate policy. 3 months later, Exxon announced the proposed acquisition of shale operator Pioneer Natural Resources for $60 billion. All of the proposed acquisitions could face pushback from the U.S., which, under the Biden administration, has stepped up antitrust reviews for energy companies and other sectors as well, such as tech. Federal Trade Commission, which enforces federal antitrust law, asked for additional information from Exxon and Pioneer about their proposed deal. The request is a step the agency takes when reviewing whether a merger could be anti-competitive under U.S. law. Pioneer disclosed the request in a filing in January. As part of the ConocoPhillips transaction, Marathon Oil shareholders will receive 0.2550 shares of ConocoPhillips common stock for each share of Marathon Oil common stock that they own, the companies said Wednesday. ConocoPhillips said Wednesday that the transaction will add highly desired acreage to its existing U.S. onshore portfolio. This acquisition of Marathon Oil further deepens our portfolio and fits within our financial framework, adding high-quality, low-cost of supply inventory adjacent to our leading U.S. unconventional position. ConocoPhillips Chairman and CEO Ryan Lance said in a prepared statement, "The deal is expected to close in the fourth quarter. It still needs approval from Marathon Oil stockholders." Separate from the transaction, ConocoPhillips said that it anticipates raising its ordinary dividend by 34% to 78 cents per share starting in the fourth quarter. The company said that once the Marathon Oil deal closes, and assuming recent commodity prices, ConocoPhillips plans to buy back more than $7 billion in shares in the first full year. It plans to repurchase more than $20 billion in shares in the first 3 years. Shares of ConocoPhillips declined by 3.3% before the market open, while Marathon Oil Corporation's stock rose more than 7%. +500 dual credit completers honored at celebration. Each year, the number of students honored at the dual credit celebration ceremony hosted by Odessa College has increased, and this year was the highest yet. Dual credit students from schools in the OC service area gathered to celebrate their accomplishments. This year marked the third year of the ceremony. The first year's event recognized 320 students who had completed Level 1 certificates, core completion, and associate degrees. Last year, 450 students were celebrated, and this year, over 500 dual credit students were honored. High school dual credit staff members and Odessa College administrators attended the event to support and congratulate the soon-to-be graduates. As a highlight of the celebration, the students also received their caps, gowns, and cords for their upcoming graduation ceremonies. Schools present at the dual credit celebration ceremony were Andrews, Balmoray, Compass, Holy Cross, Ira Ann Sheffield, Kermit, McCamey, New Tech Odessa, Odessa High School, Permian High School, Odessa Collegiate Academy, OC Techs, Pecos, Rankin, Seminole, STEM Academy, Van Horn, Wink, Montessori Mastery, and Embassy. Presidio High School was unable to attend.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.